Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the all-knowing Rage Quit.
All-knowing Rage Quit. Wow, we really got up.
We vamped up a few times since the last episode.
We leveled up. Too big for our britches.
Oh, he ripped in the ass. It's exposed. It's exposed.
Not again. This is episode 13 of Rage Quit. This is going to be our spoiler cast for The Outer Worlds, as well as a kind of a little extra chunky.
That sounds so bad.
Extra chunky. Like a ligma chowder. Extra chunky.
Ew, there it is. Well, my name's Ariel Schultz.
My name's Anthony Schultz.
And this is Rage Quit with a Rage Baby.
Yep. All the time.
All the parenting.
We're here every single week. Every Wednesday. We'll post.
Yes. This is our last episode of the season?
No, this is recorded last, but this is actually going to be the penultimate episode of the year.
What the fuck does that mean?
The second to last.
What's the last episode?
Episode 14, our game of the year.
What did we record? I don't
know. They're all out of order.
Oh my god.
Because I tried to structure this group as more evergreen content that can be listened to whenever.
I know, but
so they were all out of order when we recorded
that. Okay, that makes more sense. Sorry, guys. I should know about my own job, but I guess I
don't. Yeah, so the way we recorded this was to get the batch done at the end of the year so we can have a good start for next year, and then we're going to be making some little changes.
I think your changes were unnecessary, because now I don't know what episode we're actually on.
That's what I told you, episode 13.
Because you say it's episode 13, doesn't mean it's episode 13, it's episode 15 and 19, I don't know.
Because it fits in, it has its home and its place.
Oh, shit.
We just recorded them out of order.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
No.
More evergreen content. They can be listened to in any order.
You're in any order.
But yeah, as you listen to this, there will only be one more week worth of Rage Quit, and that'll be our Game of the Year coverage, which that's a Splice podcast. We did the bulk of it.
Again. Whoopsie.
That's why I casually dropped in what your Game of the Year was, just in case.
Casually. Yeah, I know. Because
I remember.
I did not remember.
I know you did. You said something where I was like, she doesn't remember what she picked. Because you didn't say the title. You said, my Game of the Year. And then you're just
like, shut up. You know what? But,
which is funny because I didn't say it and we didn't have the same Game of the Year.
No, we didn't.
But I remembered.
You're the husband. You remember these things.
That was fantastic.
Anyway, say what you were saying about the things in the spoiler.
Yeah, but we did this last batch for the end of the year. All out of order. It's very, like, idiosyncratic. They don't quite line up. We record them at various times.
I'm using big words.
What?
$10.
But I did that on purpose so that we could, again, have evergreen content that you could listen to in any order. Mm-hmm. And so they could be recorded in, you know, at any time, really.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
And then
it's been crazy lately.
Exactly. And then that'll give us time to, you know, spend time together as a family during the holidays. And then I can prepare for a little bit kind of more like the scripted podcast. Mm-hmm. And you and I can brainstorm ideas for mm-hmm. the beginning of the year, but we can have that kind of good to go so that we can churn out recordings that are still high quality, but be a little more efficient about it.
That
was the point of it.
No, it does. I was just teasing. I honestly didn't remember.
Yeah. But as you listen to this, like I said, there's only one more left. That'll be episode 14 of Rage Quit, and that's our Game of the Year. So we recorded that in like early October, and then we just recorded kind of a little
ad lib.
Yeah, an addendum to the episode.
Even bigger words.
So unnecessary.
Anyways, so this episode is going to be a big spoiler hoopla with Outer Worlds.
Yeah.
And something apparently you have a gold nugget about that I don't know about.
It's nothing huge, but I think we this one might run over a little over an hour.
Oh God, why? Not the content.
But the two topics do kind of fit well onto one another. I just wanted to kind of leave one off the table because I do want your opinion very fresh, and I think you'll be able to offer something very intelligent and like apropos to it.
I don't think you're getting much of that apropos intelligence right now because it's my Friday, my brain's toast. But
anyway. I think you struggled with apropos, but then intelligent was fine. As apropos, intelligent. Like, I was like, the demon possession kicked in halfway through that sentence. It did. Hello, Malik.
I don't use the big words most of the time. I use $5 words. I use $10 words.
That was $12.95.
Anyways, continuing about your opinions about the Outer Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, I was very incredibly hyped about the Outer Worlds. I really enjoy...
You're extremely excited about that. You're like, this is my birthday game. It's going to be the game of the year.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be the game of the year. I wasn't going to, like, call it as that, but...
No, I remember us talking off...
yeah, I mean, it could have been. Yeah, like, it could have easily. Yeah, it's kind of how I felt. Obsidian, Obsidian Studio, who created... the Outer Worlds is a studio that's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. They did the original Fallouts.
Yeah.
Back in the day. They like the back first two design. Before Bethesda got a hold of it. And they did... They've done Pillars of Eternity, mm-hmm. I believe. Very, like, complex, like, kind of RPG. And then they did Fallout New Vegas when Bethesda had it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they still have it, but they let them kind of do an in-between...
Yeah, the Fallout Vegas.
Yeah, in between Fallout 3 and 4. And then, kind of as a middle finger to Bethesda, they did the Outer Worlds, which is very similar to Fallout as a whole, especially the Bethesda ones. It's just a huge-ass
combination of, like, three or four other games that are already out there.
Well, yeah, I'll let you then go off on that. I'm like,
okay, fine, then I'll go off on my spiel, because I don't necessarily play games too often, which I will probably soon repeat myself. But with the Outer Worlds, I swear to God, I was watching Borderlands / Fallout / fucking Bioshock game. I'm like, why am I watching all these games when I like them for their individual reasons and everything that they put in here was just a janky shit of those games?
Yeah, I mean, that was my big takeaway from it as well. Is there a lot of people...
It's good stuff. It's a janky shit.
We're like... heralding, like, how great it was, but that it was, like, missing this generation, and I could see that void not being fulfilled by mm-hmm. really any other game, this generation in particular,
mm-hmm.
but I can also see why there was a void there to begin with, and why studios haven't done it, because supposedly Obsidian is fantastic with these types of RPGs, mm-hmm. and, you know, Karma Systems... and working morality into their games and like dialogue options that affect, you know, the gameplay or the story, and, you know, it encourages multiple playthroughs mm-hmm. and
gives you different endings.
I feel like I played an Obsidian game from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's like, why have there been no improvements on this? It's not that they like stole good parts from, and it's stealing is probably a little harsh of like a term to use, but they paid homage to some of these series like Bioshock and Borderlands and Fallout even, and Fallout makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that they didn't do it better than any of
no,
them.
No, they didn't.
That's the thing.
Dear God,
like, it doesn't bother me when
there's multiple
series or certain studios like take something from another franchise or studio and then mm-hmm. kind of put their spin on it. And then usually they have an idea, though, to make it better or expand on it or to nuance it or to put, you know, their
stamp repertoire,
you know, their stable of games that they've worked on for the past, you know, couple decades mm-hmm. or a few decades, to put that kind of experience and, like, wealth of knowledge behind just a mechanic that maybe somebody else, like, pioneered. Like, that makes sense. Like, but they didn't.
No.
They just pretty much riffed it, and then it was a poor man's riff, in my opinion. And they even riffed themselves and did it poorly.
Yeah,
and it's like that's
I
so
think
crazy.
That's the worst part. It's like, like you're saying, it's when they ended up doing the like the armor and adding suits and changing it, it just looked like a janky Fallout.
It was like Mass Effect too. That was
Mass
another
Effect
one.
Too,
Mass Effect like armor and stuff, and Or, yeah, like power armor in Fallout. Wearing
fucking power armor, it's janky and bulky. And then, like, when you're talking to the people, when they randomly turn to you, poof, their helmets randomly pop off, and poof, their helmets randomly pop back on.
Yeah, and it's just, that was really weird for me. I feel like there's so many great RPGs that have systems in play where you, like, Diablo's a good example. Where you can take a certain, like, looking, like, aesthetic-wise, like, piece of armor, or even, like, a complete set of armor, and then you can, you know, transform it into a different set of armor. So it has all the same stats, and it's still, like, high-end for your character at that moment, but it looks like something that you want for your particular class of character or type of character.
Yeah, like, if you have, like, the witch doctor, you want it to look like a jinky witch doctor outfit.
Yeah, and you might have a favorite, like, set, you know, that the witch doctor can wear, but maybe you find, and you get that really early on, you're like, I really like how my character looks, you can
edit it to such.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but you find more powerful armor later on, but it doesn't look really cool. You don't really like it, but it's stronger. You need it to play the game. Well, you can make that armor look like the old armor, but still have those kind of stats. But that's a fairly common mechanic in RPGs. And by the end of The Outer Worlds, all my companions, and myself included, had the strongest armor that I could find. They all look the same. They look like washed up reject stormtroopers who fell into a 60s tie-dye machine. And I thought it was ridiculous because the main focus was supposed to be on, like, side quests and character development and, like, speaking and dialogue options with these characters. You didn't see their face anymore. And it was like, I just don't understand. Or if you did see their face, like you said, they're still in this ridiculously bulky armor that really just doesn't fit.
No.
And you're like, well, why can't I, you know, this is the far-flung future. Why can't I do what I want to do? You know, like,
change it, why can't I make it
look
more fit?
You know, like, apparently the Dark Age or medieval inspired Diablo can.
Yeah, seriously. And
I just found it just weird and jarring not to have that mechanic. And that's not honestly a mechanic that I've ever really thought about very much, actually.
No, because every other game we played has been able to do it.
And I've never really used it. That's the funny thing. I really wanted to use it in The Outer Worlds, though. Because they all look the same. Because The
Outer Worlds was so bright and gorgeous and beautiful. And it is like... Bah, bah, bah,
you know? Now all my characters are the same
blue. They look like, when you said stormtroopers, I feel in a vat of tie-dye, you know?
Yeah, and that's all I look like. They were all just various shades of, like, blue or yellow that kind of fit the color palette of the rest of the game, but they all look the same, like, and you couldn't tell them apart. You know, I had to make sure and look at the names underneath when I was selecting what companions to take when I would leave my ship, because they have on that screen, they have their helmets on. You can't see their faces. Like, so I'm like, okay, I want to take Ellie with me. Okay, that one's Ellie. I need to get that one.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, when, like, the other games, you can see their helmets or their fate helmets are off or whatever. And another thing that really sucked is, like, we've always played kind of big RPG and games like that, MMOs even, right off the gate, with all the jankiness, all the bugs and stuff, because it's just games. That's just how they are.
Yeah, especially nowadays. I mean, I'm not going to beat around the bush, like, developing a game. Like, I'm fully aware of how complicated it is and how big these teams are and how much money goes into it and the technology and behind it.
Always something that fucking gets missed.
Yeah, and bugs don't bother me as much because of that, especially...
I mean, real bugs bother me. But...
Real bugs bother you? Yeah. Roaches? What about lobsters? Yeah.
They're delicious.
They're sea roaches, though.
I like sea roaches.
Sea roaches in advance. Mm-hmm. Scrum-diddly-dumptious.
Sea roaches.
Exactly.
I just came up with two more dad. But, and it's like, this gun was super fucking janky. Like, one entire completely fucking level, just the voices were off and echoed itself. And I'm like, what is that sound? Something was grinding.
There was a lot of audio issues, which I'm sure will eventually be patched out. And so, you know, one of my big arguments for Days Gone being my game of the year is how much that game, like, I didn't have really any issues with it when it first started, but I know other people did. Yeah. And now that stuff's been patched out, then they've had all this free content added on. I think that adds to the overall game. And I'm hopeful The Outer Worlds will do the same kind of thing. So I have a hard time knocking it for that. It was annoying, though, on a first playthrough. I'll definitely give you
that. Well, it's not that I did it once or twice. It was through the entire fucking level. There's this grinding sound. I'm like, turn that off or quit playing the game.
Yeah. No, it was obnoxious. Especially for a game that is very, like,
language heavy.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, like, focused on dialogue. Yeah,
trying to focus and make sure you pick the right dialogue and go the right route.
Yeah, and how you want to play the game and, like, what can you do and, you know, what can't you do based on how you've upgraded your character and all that good stuff. And then, yeah, if you really can't concentrate to even read through it, much less hear it, it definitely, like, loses its luster. It ruins it a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Right,
because it's very much focused on that. It'd be like playing... you know, like Rock Band or Guitar Hero back in the day, and then it was like, you know, you're hearing the beat for like Thriller, and then it's like Smash Mouth lyrics. And you're like, you wouldn't accept that. That would piss you off.
I gotta think of two things that made no fucking sense together.
I almost went Sum 41 for some reason. Like, I don't know why. High school brain was like, go!
Young me. Oh, God, no. But no, I mean, it was still a good game, but it just, like, the ending made no sense at all. Where the fuck did the main boss come from? Who the fuck was she?
Oh, yeah, that was bizarre. I guess this is a spoiler cast. I'm, like, a little reserved and talking about specifics. Yeah, quit being reserved, you bitch. But...
take it off. I meant, what?
What? But, yeah, that was bizarre because the board, like, the capitalistic board is, like, the... seemingly the main villain throughout the entire campaign. And they talk about the chairman of the board, and he heads one of the companies, and that company pretty much, like, is, you know, has a little bit more, like, clout or credence because he's the chairman of the board and the head of that company, UDL. And so he has thus control over the board, pretty much. And... they talk about the Chairman Rockwell. His face is all over, you know, the Halcyon, which is like the solar system that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was it. I thought the chairman was it. Well, no, there's this gal who pops in and asks you to turn in the guy that you can choose to work for, Phineas Wells, or not. And then you see her at the end, and then she's the boss, and that's it. Like, you don't come across her ever. You don't hear really much about her. No. Like, there's no... I read through all of the computer entries that I came across, too.
Yeah.
Like, there is little to no mention of her. There's a lot about the board in general or specific companies.
Then it makes sense.
And there's a lot about UDL. And that's all the armor that we talked about that looks all the same as all UDL armor.
Yeah.
And then Chairman Rockwell, where you actually go to his office, like...
Which was a sad boss, too. You just talked your way out of shit.
Well, there's nobody in the room with him anyways. Yeah, so I'm wondering if there's any other... Like, I'll find out. I will eventually do a second playthrough, but... Like, I wonder if there's like, even a, like, conflict or, like, violent option to take there. Because I noticed I had to do that part again. And after talking with him, it isn't as if you could, like, fail... like, speech checks, and then you would probably get attacked by, like, you know, his personal guard in the room or something. There's nobody else there.
No, and that's
there's no one in the room at all. And then the guards that are outside who could chase you, they stop at the door. And then you can go in, and then it's like he immediately starts talking to you, and then that's when you have, like, the speech checks.
Yeah.
And once you wrap that up, there is nobody else in the room. So it's like...
Yeah, it makes no sense.
How would this be a fair fight anyways? Like, this wouldn't be challenging... even if my dialogue, you know...
was low as
could
be.
Yeah, super low, and I had focused on just combat. But...
No, and that's why it didn't make any sense.
Threw that other gal in just at the end.
Yeah, the
and she even had a proxy, like, boss.
Yeah.
That was just some random guy. He was the warden of the prison, and he was an automaton. And it was like, that was it.
What? Yeah, when you're fighting the dude, it's like, what? This makes no sense at all.
It wasn't like they had talked about. Like, Borderlands would lead up with shit. Like, they would tell you. Yeah,
they'd be like, you hear this thing about the thing? You know.
Yeah, you'd hear chatter from, like, NPCs or, like, you know, like, in the original Borderlands, like, the gal would come up and say something about it. Like, oh, he's feared in, you know, whatever area of the map or world. Or, you know, this is Handsome Jack's general or something. There would always be lead up and, like, pretense. But it was like, no, you had not heard about this warden.
Nope.
Until you got there. I didn't even know that place was a prison planet until I got there. And then I feel like there was a lot of assumptions, like, you should just know.
And that's the thing, too. It's like...
that's bizarre. I was like, I don't recall hearing that. Or only seeing it once or twice. But it's like, you can't go there, so...
Yeah, and no one talks about it or leads up to it. And, like, another weird thing, too, is, like, some of the side quests made no sense. Like, when you were in the mean fancy place. I can't remember what it was called.
Well, Byzantium, I think.
And when that one lady says they're these lottery winners or whatever, and they were just slaughtering the people.
Yeah, they were just killing them. Yeah.
Why?
Oh, yeah, it doesn't quite make sense because, like, the main plot for the board is that they want to freeze the rest of the colony because the colony is going to starve, and they don't want to sacrifice their rich lifestyle, which would obviously include eating what they want to eat. And so they're going to freeze the rest of the colony, and they're pretty much just going to live off of what they can get in, like, perpetuity. They have enough for just them. Yeah. And supposedly they are going to be then working on the food crisis to eventually unthaw everybody out and have them work for them again.
Yeah.
Like, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't really make any sense because it's like, well, you're already slaughtering people, and then there's no mention of that, yeah, like by the higher-ups. It was like, and there's no, like, outcry about it either.
It's a weird.
Like, there's not NPCs talking about, like, regular everyday Joes
disappearing.
About people just disappearing and never coming back, or being suspicious of the lottery system, or, you know, Chairman Rockwell, when he talked to him at the end, is like, well, we don't need to freeze people, we've just been killing them. Like, yeah, it's like, there's no, like, there's all these, like, random story threads that just, they would very easily attach to one another, but they don't.
No.
And it's really weird. Like, you wouldn't even need to make a stretch to, like, have like that story.
Spider was on LCD, and then, like, there's some strands over here and over there, and, like, what the fuck? Are there even, and one's not even on the web?
Yeah, and you could easily make it into a web, like, a more whole tapestry, and it would make sense, but they just chose to admit it, or just didn't care enough to include it.
That, or it's like, I get the choice systems, but it's like, if you make the wrong choice or don't do the right thing, did you accidentally fucking not do something right?
I don't see, and I, that kind of system I like and is very indicative of Fallout New Vegas, which you haven't seen me play that one.
No, but I've heard enough of it.
That one was very, like, choice heavy and resulted in multiple endings, far more than Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Fallout 4 kind of did, like, a light version of New Vegas. There was far more endings and, like, factions, and your dialogue really, like, affected how those played out and stuff and what ending you got. Very similar to the Outer Worlds. Mm-hmm. Even the montage at the end was a direct lift from how they did in New Vegas.
That makes sense.
Where they, like, talk about each and every character, what happened to them, and, like, the future of Halcyon, and, like, you know, the events of your character and what they did and all that, all that crap. That part doesn't bother me. I like ones, because to me it adds replayability.
True, yeah.
Because it's like, it encourages you to play it again.
Yeah.
That's a, like, a fine rope to, like, walk. Like, in an age with giant open world games, if it is that caliber and expects you to play multiple times, how do you find the time?
Yeah.
To beat it multiple times? That's so true. Then it's, like, is replayability, like, really necessary if it's already, like, an 80-hour open world game?
Yeah.
Outer Worlds truncates their game. The worlds aren't that big.
No, you figure they'd be there really itty-bitty.
And I feel like it was, like, between 20 and maybe 30 hours.
If that.
I would say, like, 25. Mm-hmm. It sounds reasonable for my playthrough, at least. And I played on hard.
You did, yeah.
I haven't played on the Supernova difficulty yet because I wanted to do the companion side quest and the companions to have permadeath in Supernova.
Yeah.
So if they die, they're gone forever kind of a thing. Uh-oh. And I knew they had quests with them, so I wanted to do their quest first, line. So yeah. I just played on hard where they don't die. Die. But yeah, I understand why they, like, shortened it. I get that. And it does definitely encourage you to play it again because it is so short. Yeah,
but it doesn't really flesh out the stories and the plot holes.
Yeah, but and that's the one I'm getting to. I would rather prefer only playing through it once.
Yeah.
And have it just be bigger.
Yeah.
Instead of having to play through it twice to see all the different options you could take, but not really having a very well rounded out
story,
like levels and story.
Yeah, because it's just like there's just so many plot holes. Half the time when I was watching you play, I'm like, "What the fuck are you doing? And where are you?"
Well, and they looked the same. It was like it looked very colorful and it was pretty and it was a good contrast to Fallout. Fallout uses a lot of like grays and kind of like earth tones. And it kind
of makes sense for the end of the world.
And it does, yeah. It definitely fits the tone of the Fallout universe perfectly. But it was refreshing to see a very like colorful and like vibrant environment.
Bright features, yeah.
But again, we do have Borderlands, which is very colorful and has a very unique art style, mm-hmm. and like stands out and pops as well, and is kind of an antithesis for, you know, a science fiction, like, you know, pseudo apocalyptic game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what the Outer Worlds is trying to be, but we already have another fantastic, which has better shooting mechanics too on top of it.
And story,
yeah, which is true.
It's like, I'd rather play Borderlands over and over and over again and listen to the same story. Oh, and
I have.
Is what I mean.
Yeah, but once I finish, I know I will go back and do Outer Worlds and play another
round of it.
But Borderlands, I played like back to back to back and enjoyed it. And I've gone back, you and I have gone back mm-hmm. even. And it's like my third or fourth time playing the game. I'm excited to play that game still.
Yeah.
The Outer Worlds is kind of like, yeah, I'm going to move on. And I went back to Medieval. Yeah, it's like I went back to that, and then the Evil Within 2.
You went back to Medieval, the $25 game, the $10 game.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, meh, whatever, not that big a deal. But yeah, even though they use that wonderful color palette, all the worlds look the same, in my opinion. They do. There's like just very small differences. Like Monarch, which is like one of the main moons and probably the biggest level, looks
like forest,
just like Terra 2.
Yeah.
Which is where the planet you start out on. And then you go back, and Byzantine, which is not a separate place, by the way, it's on Terra 2. I'm like, why? I expected in my head the way they made Byzantine, like, or Byzantium, sorry, Byzantium sound, I was gonna like, oh, it's gonna be like its whole, like, moon or something that is just all one gigantic city or, like, some crazy space station or something.
Yeah.
That was, like, far removed from everybody else, you know, from the plebs below them that work. And it was like, oh, no, you know that, like, secret settlement where they're just making diet toothpaste and then the one town that you could, like, possibly fuck up and drive into ruin? Yeah. The rich people are right on the other side. Like, and I was like, okay, well, again, it's like, plot-wise, doesn't really make sense. Like, sorry, like...
Why the fuck am I here?
It's like, they did a good job with the Groundbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
One of the colony ships retrofitted as, like, a city or a port. And it's like, they're like, the free people. Like, they don't work for the board. Made sense that they were on a colony ship and they weren't on any of the planets that had been colonized by the Borg.
Yeah.
So it's like, I just naturally assumed that Byzantium would be like this fantastically beautiful like moon or separate world or something. And nope. I was like, nah.
Well, that and the fact that it's like, it doesn't make any sense either. It's not that you go back and forth between the planets, but they really don't offer much to build on after you're done.
No, it was like I pretty readily did the side quest as I did the main story missions, and the balance and pacing there was pretty decent, but yeah, there's no endgame content at all. No. It just encourages you just to replay it completely over again, and it's one of the reasons I didn't go back to it immediately, because, and I'm hopeful that there'll be DLC or patches like Days Gone has done. Because Obsidian is really well known for doing good DLC.
Mm-hmm.
That'll remedy that for me, at least. But right now...
You can't even go back and play.
It's like there's nothing else. It just starts you right before the end boss.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, there's a point of no return. It asks you to save. If you beat the game, then it and then you say load game, it just loads you back there. And that's it. That's the last time it saves, and then it kind of calls it a day. There isn't like, oh, these other side quests opened up, or this whole new world opened up. You can go explore this if you want to.
Yeah.
And there's people there in quests and stuff now that you've, you know, defeated the board or, you know, sided with the board, whatever you decide to do kind of a thing. It's like, I feel like Phineas Wells or the board could be like, here's a nav key to Olympus. And now you get to go, like, explore that world. And then there's, you know, there are, like, 5 hours of, like, quests and searching that world or something. Well, there's nothing. It's just like, nah, you're done. You can replay the end mission if you want. Or we'd rather you just, like, restart the entire game over, which you just played. And then you're going to know all the decisions.
And do it again.
Well,
that and the fact that it's like, you know... Not to be a dick, but this is how I am. If I know a game's got multiple endings, I'm gonna read which one I want to do, and then I'm going to just watch the other endings on YouTube.
So it's funny that you bring that up, because <I'm an> I didn't do this with Fallout New Vegas, but I did do it with Fallout 4 for sure, and I in part did it in Fallout 3 in a different way though, because that one had a karma system as well,
and you fucked it up.
I picked up one of the trophies for it, which I still have never gone back and gotten, but...
Bastards.
Yeah, at the point of, like, no return, that save, mm-hmm. usually what a lot of gamers will do in those kind of games, they just put hard save points in throughout the game.
Yeah.
And so then it's, like, as, like, huge decisions come up,
mm-hmm.
usually it auto-saves beforehand, so then you reload to that save, you create a hard save mm-hmm. outside of the auto-save, and then you go through that big decision, and then you pick one path that you want to pick. And then you rewind and you just go back to that hard save you made whenever you want. You can even do it at the end of the game after you've already gone through everything, as you've just sprinkled these hard saves throughout, and then just make a different decision. And you get to play through all of them without playing the entire game again. And that's how I got my platinum for, like, Fallout 4. I did all the endings that way. Fallout 4. I didn't play it completely over.
Goddamn village.
And that's what I needed to do with New Vegas, but I didn't, for whatever reason, I didn't do it with that. I just did one ending and then I had to completely start over.
But that's what I mean. It doesn't even give you that option to do that. Do a hard save.
And you can do a hard save. Well, but you don't really... They did a better job intermixing in, like, the serious decisions.
Yeah.
Now I could probably pick them out. And you could look at also the trophy list or the achievement list.
True.
And then just do a hard save and then go through it that way. But it's kind of like, eh.
It's too sprinkled in, though. It's too mixed.
It was too intermixed in. The Fallout ones, usually it was just the end. And it would come up and say the same kind of thing. Like, but you could change, because it was open world, you could change how certain factions viewed you.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, like, backtrack. Like, if you were in with Caesar's Legion in mm-hmm. Fallout New Vegas, you could quickly make them hate you and then have, like, the NCR really like you and do that. And
like, the only time one faction didn't like you in Outer World is because you destroyed their planet and they ended up starving.
Oh, the settlement, Edgewater?
Yeah.
Well, and that, that was Spacer's choice, but then by the end, because I pretty much just played along the lines of what Phineas Wells wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I figured he was the good guy.
Yeah.
So I played, like, the good ending, which it was the good ending. The board, which includes Spacer's Choice, by the way, like, they hated me at the end. And that was it. Everybody else loved me.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, well. Dunsky, I guess. Like, yeah. And I just played that off the cuff. I didn't look up to see what the endings were or how many endings there were.
I'm saying I'm the asshole that does that.
I was just like, I bet this is the good ending, and I played through it, and it was the good ending.
Yeah.
So it was like, that's kind of very telling of the writing mm-hmm. of the game as well. It's like, I could easily just pick out what was the good one, and it was. There was no curveballs, no twists, no, like...
Oh, shit, that was a fuck-up.
Yeah, where it's like, I did something... Because that, I think, would be awesome to see in a game that style, mm-hmm. is if you're like, these are the good guys, these are the good guys, these are the good guys, and it's like, oh, no, you just fucking sided with Vader. And you're like, oh, fuck! Like, I had no idea. He's like, yeah, he swindled you. Like, he totally smoozed you, like, and controlled everything around you, what you were seeing and hearing, in such a way that it fit into the gameplay. Oh, here's
another plot hole that irritated the shit out of me.
That it was like, yeah, you got bamboozled, and you have a chance to kind of backtrack, but not really, mm-hmm. like... Yeah.
You
can just keep agreeing with him and, like, go with it. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, like, another thing that irritated me, too, when you're in Edgewater, this is a giant cat on my head, when you're in Edgewater and you pick the botanical people, and how we were making the running joke of the reason why she got the garden growing again and she's stealing bodies and mulching them.
It kind of seemed like it. Like, that was, like, alluded to.
Nothing else was explained about that.
No.
Even in the end, like, little end blurb, it's like, no one could really figure out how she did it.
Oh, yeah, they didn't even, like, give you that, like, little tidbit, even if that is the case, and I just didn't stumble across some information that said as such.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that was, like, one of the few choices where it was, like, and it's the very first one you make, which is mm-hmm. weird. You think that one would be more of a tutorial, kind of, like, this is how the game works and plays.
Yeah, no.
It was, like, oh... The botanical garden, the leader, pretty much said that they would accept anybody and mm-hmm. that they're a refuge. And then at the end, they're like, yeah, she didn't accept everybody. Like, Edgewater starved to death. Like, and then they just moved on. And you're like, okay, well, the reason I picked her is because I thought she would save everybody. And it was like, nope, she didn't give a shit. She was the evil choice. This is the only part in that game that it did the bait and switch like I would want throughout
the
a game like that.
Game, though.
But it's in, like, the tutorial portion of the game, so it doesn't really make sense. It was just... Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I thought for sure, though, that they were going to throw that in there, that she was mulching people and well, using them as fertilizer.
Like they even specifically said that they look for her plans and how she got the earth to accept growth and...
Yeah, and then nothing. Also Edgewater has a giant cemetery that is constantly being looted by marauders.
Yeah.
And like, bodies are going missing.
Yeah. It's a little suspicious.
And maybe I just didn't finish up like a quest in there or missed something.
That's what I mean. It's like there's got to be something. I don't know.
Maybe, I hope that there is.
I hope. My hopes and dreams are for this game not to suck as bad as it did. But I feel like it did.
It did. It just, it wasn't great.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was a good game, all in all.
It was a solid game. I would give it like a 7.
I'd give it a 2.
I just don't think it's that bad.
No, I'm being a jackass.
I'd give it a 7. I mean, we're being very harsh on it, but it's like, it...
I'd give it a 6.5.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm right in there. Yeah. I would totally agree. I think it was a decent game, but I don't think it was a great game that everybody is saying it is.
No.
But I feel like a lot of people are saying it's a great game is because they want to hate on Bethesda and Fallout 76 rather than them holistically reviewing a game.
Or, how dare they not have a proper opinion?
What's not a proper opinion? But, okay, this leads into, like, the other part that I wanted to talk about. All right, I think we spoiled the...
Spoiled.
Spoiled the spoiled?
Yep.
I think we spoiled the shit out of the Outer Worlds and, like, expressed our, like, disdain or disappointment for it enough.
Yeah.
Spill it. I'm so way, like, angsty about this.
Give me the beans! Spill them!
Okay, so when I was working as a journalist, I only did a little bit of games journalism, but I did a lot of, like, comic book and... film and novel reviews. Like that was my bread and butter for like arts and entertainment.
Nutella.
For every outlet that I worked for, and then even prior when I was at Eastern and in high school, in my English, like, AP courses or, like, honors courses and my rudimentary English courses. And then later on when I had more, like, specific, like, areas of concentration at Eastern, when they discussed journalism, when they had, like, crossover to that, and like I said, this did carry on over to the outlets that I worked for, but this was, you know, close to 10 years ago now, probably about 7.
Yeah.
We had they set up specific, like, paradigms for us to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the point being is that a company, even independent, like, you set up a, like, a rubric.
Okay.
Like, a, like, guidelines
mm-hmm.
of what is good and what is bad. How to rank things accordingly. Like, what does that come to if, like, the outlet or for whatever reason gave it, like, 10 points or, like, 5-point scale. Then it was like, well, okay, for... the technical side of this, like if there's X amount of spelling or grammar mistakes within this manuscript, it's a, you know, 0.5 over a dozen instances of this kind of error.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there might be other things. So it's like they might determine length. Like, is it the actual length of, you know, a novel? Because there are, like... define parameters for what a novel is or what a novella is or what a short story is, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But anyways, they broke down what technical side they could to whatever artwork, and then that would be assigned to, like, a point scale or something to consider or, like, critique.
Yeah.
And then there was also, then the more objective side to it that the reviewer would have to, like, more so grapple with. There would usually be, like, some sort of either, like, orientation or maybe even follow-ups on said orientation. Mm-hmm. Regardless, there would be a strict paradigm, and the idea was is that you could pick any reviewer from that company to review the same thing, and then within a margin of error, they would give it the same score.
Okay.
So they would objectively review, like, Death Stranding, for example... as a 9. It's a 9 out of 10 game.
Okay.
And then everybody in their entire company, independent of that person who maybe was tasked with reviewing it, would give it anywhere between an 8.5 and a 9.5 review score.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah.
There was no room for error, like, especially for an official review. You might have some outliers, but relatively speaking, everyone was trained the same way, Everyone looks at the same kind of things. Everyone critiques the same kind of ways. That's not saying that your opinion is the same as what you're, like, writing about.
No.
But it does bridge the gap between objectivism and subjectivism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially when concerning a work of art, like a video game or a book or a comic book or a film.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was very much, like, ingrained as a writer. Like, and it's called holistic reviewing.
Okay.
Like, and company set paradigms. Like, that's how it is.
Yeah.
That's how it was, at least. That makes sense, in my opinion. That makes it so it's not like Joe Schmo is like, this is a piece of shit game, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. Chrono Trigger, one of the best games ever, you know, and ever reviewed on top of it, and Chrono Cross. It got perfect scores across the, like, board.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of review structure bleed over into artwork? Like, is it, and there are there, like, artists, even incredibly famous ones, and you know, it's probably, like, posthumous, but then it's like, these are, like, the greats, and these are, like, or maybe you studied, these are the worst. Like, these are ones where they got a lot of clout during their time
mm-hmm.
when they shouldn't have, or they did during a certain period of time, but really, it's like, you know, technique-wise is awful, mm-hmm. or wasn't very representative of anything around them, or was just elitist bullshit,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, is there anything in your mind, like, whether at, like, a small level, or, like, you know, maybe in commission-wise, mm-hmm. or, like, all-time greats, that, like, kind of fits into that, or makes sense, like, with, like, a visual medium like you do?
No, because when it comes to visual, like, artwork, painting, perspectives, you know, sculptorism, whatever you want to call it, it's just a vast art, is people are always heavily opinionated about it.
But then, like, how do art critics exist then?
Art critics exist because there's always going to be a critic.
Yeah, but, like, where, how does, like, an art critic, like, have any, like, credibility if it's so highly subjective, mm-hmm. and there is no objective nature to art critique at all?
Mm-hmm.
Then how could there be any, like, credible art critics? Because it could be like, well, the homeless guy down the street says this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the artist. That guy's right. Yeah. Like, he's the art critic.
You'd be surprised how many artists say that.
But it's like, that person's not making, you know, six figures as an art critic.
No.
And doesn't have an art history degree. But, like, a person who has an art history degree who is, like, going around and, like, that's great or that's awful, like, and doing write-ups about it. Like, why is that person's viewpoint... Mm-hmm. like, more important or more correct, it would mm-hmm. have to be, than the homeless guy.
Because they, like, with anybody who has a degree or some quote-unquote education, has, you know, done, you know, let's say, research into a certain genre of art. But the thing is, with artwork, if, you know, especially back in the early aughts, you know, the 1800s and whatever, if...
Well, the early odds is that's like 2000s.
They're all lots. Anyways, the early art prospect is because art critics are a little harder to explain, and it's a funny part that they are. It's because, you know, with gaming journalists, movie buffs, journalists, they have to have some varying degree of, not necessarily education, because it's the same with the art, but they have to, I don't know, I feel like with that, have, you know, played a game, done, you know, read a comic book or something. Artists' critiques don't necessarily have to have done any kind of art. They just gotta give their opinion.
Yeah, but just because I reviewed, like, films mm-hmm. or video games, so I've never made a video game or made a film.
No, and the thing is, like, this, like, with, like,
books art, is a little easier, yeah, man, I agree, yeah. Because you can be critical, obviously, most artists mm-hmm. are critical of their own work, so, like, ooh, if yeah. you're critical of yourself as a writer, you can therefore usually be critical of other people mm-hmm. as a writer.
And I feel like with, like, art critics,
I'm just wondering, like, how it exists, like, how that, like, functions, like...
I
totally believe you, because it's, like, that's a world I'm not, like,
no.
privy to,
mm-hmm.
but, like, as it concerns with gaming journalism, I find it really weird. So, the example that comes, like, first and foremost to mind is, like, Death Stranding recently came out, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't read any reviews, Like, I'll make my own opinion on it. We have our own company, so. Yeah. I'll talk to people about it, mm-hmm. but usually I don't really have any big outlets that I go to anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I read through. I like informational articles, but. Anyways, mm-hmm. like IGN Global.
Yeah.
You look at all of their branches that reviewed Death Stranding. It's like, you know, IGN Spain, 9 point something, mm-hmm. you know, IGN, you know, I'm not sure where all their branches are. But anyways, it was like a list of like maybe 24 mm-hmm. like locations across the entire earth. You know, we'll use the 24 as like a hard number for the sake of argument.
Mm-hmm.
23 of them gave it around a 9.
Yeah.
The United States gave it a 6.
Okay.
How? How is it that 23 out of 24, like, dentists approve, but there's that one fucking dentist? Like, who is that guy? Like, and, of course, it had to be the good US of A. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, obviously, there is a paradigm that exists mm-hmm. that IGN follows.
Mm-hmm.
And internationally, they all followed it. And got about the same score independently of one another, and then just related in their own terms mm-hmm. and their own native language and in their own press. And then in the United States, we give it like almost the same outlet, by the way. So they'd have the same paradigms and the same, like, you know, code of conduct. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, they gave it like 3 points less.
Well, it's because that's where you say the supposedly comes into play, because, like, with art critics, art critics. Everyone's a critic, and don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a little harder to describe an art critic and how they became famous and making six figures for art, because artists are their own worst critics, and 9 times out of 10 we don't give a fuck what everyone else says.
Yeah. And, I mean, I can see that part of it. Part about art critics, like,
mm-hmm.
obviously there is something that defines like an art critic, though, because mm-hmm. it's not everybody is an art critic. Like, no, everyone can be an art critic, but also everyone can be a film reviewer. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in a professional sense, like, an art critic.
See, and that's where the one thing I can't really talk about, because I don't care about other people's artwork. And
no, okay, that part I understand as an artist. I was just wondering, like, if, like, with your education background in art, if that, like, if something like that ever came up where it was like you were taught,
not
like how they function or why they function the way they do, or something like that. Themselves,
no, because the fact is, art's going to always sell. Right, so games are always going to sell.
Yeah.
And then you're always going to get those people, like, with the games, like we're saying, you know, supposedly they follow these things with this, you know, Death Stranding, especially. People are always going to kind of see that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, art is still art, but it's been strayed away from a little bit more nowadays for, like, pop culture situations. And I'm not saying art's not still there. People aren't creating it, some just gorgeous stuff, but it's just not as
relevant. More elitist or niche anymore than pop culture, which is, like, incredibly accessible.
It is.
To the masses.
Compared to, like, with artists, you know.
Spending $1.2 million on some rare painting or.
Yeah. Then, you know, there are still.
Or people. Even having the wants to go to a gallery.
Yeah.
Or showing. You know, like, either a particular artist or.
Yeah, like I said, the dead arts. And then it's like, back in the day when that's all you had.
That's a valid point.
That makes sense.
So it's more like critiques. The relevancy of the medium, therefore, like,
there's dictates the critics. And then there's the critiques. That's why, for me, for now, like, I couldn't tell you, because they're not as relevant.
Yeah, it's more ethereal. So maybe there is less of a paradigm because one doesn't need to exist.
No. And they don't need to exist necessarily in the same worlds, because a critic...
That would be an interesting, like, piece to either, like, research or even write about, or
mm-hmm.
is that, is, like, the decline of... Like, you know, the art critic. Like, well, because it's less necessary. Because if it is just for, like, you know, the elite that can spend money on beautiful paintings. Okay, then
it's like this. Let me phrase it this. How do you see art today?
Internet, online. I mean, primarily. As far as, like... Are you talking about, like, top level? Or just, like, all across the board? Or
just,
like,
art.
Just art in general?
Like, painting, sculpture, art.
It usually is a, like, derivative of some other work. is what it comes down, at least for me. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, concept art for a video game. It's, you know, even fan art for, like, film or television or, I mean, it is. It's always derivative of some other faucet of pop culture. And that's usually how I consume it. It's online. It's digital. It's virtual. It's not like I'm going to a gallery and, like, seeing, you know, this precious painting or even, like, a local artist that's done, you know, amazing work or something.
How do you see video games?
At home.
You buy them. You're in your comfort of your home. They're there for you. Like you said, you're not going to galleries. And it's the same thing with being online. It's relatively easy to see something instead of, you know, it's going to be addicting to say it. I don't need to go across the world to see an art when I can look at it. Oh, you're not visually valuing it. Whatever. Fuck off.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it's not as relevant to the easy access we have to it now compared to when it was relevant back in the day when art critique mattered.
Yeah.
And so it made more sense to have a criteria.
These criticisms still matter. I feel like we just matter. That was kind of like my point is that, see, and you opened up a whole new gateway too, especially with it being like consumed in smaller bites digitally, because then it can then be critiqued, like even like especially like remotely. I just wonder why. I know why. So I guess I shouldn't say I wonder, but it's disappointing to see because of social media, and our connectivity to the internet, that a lot of these like hard kind of like lines or like guidelines or paradigms like I've overused, like they defined what it was to be a critic or a reviewer and to provide a critical eye, and it was a skill that had to be taught to you that made you a professional. Basically you didn't have to be paid to be a professional, but you get the gist. And now everybody under the sun feels as if they're a critic, and they'll be like, this is an awful game. This is a shit company.
Because even...
And this, or this is the best thing in the world. And it's like, well, no. It's my opinion. I can say whatever I want kind of a thing. I was like, well, yeah, I get freedom of speech and all that. I'm fine with that shit. But to be like, this is how it is kind of an attitude. It's like, no, believe it or not, it's a skill set to be able to critique something, like, honestly.
Yes.
And not have any bias.
And I'm not saying there's not art... Obviously, because there's still museums and big artists and all that stuff there. And such, but it's not as valued anymore. It's not valued anymore. You could even see it today in video games. It's not valued anymore.
There are a lot of things not valued
anymore. And that's when you see the big shift, because, yes, it's awesome to have the interwebs. Yes, it's amazing to have that access at the fucking... have my cell phone right here. Boom. I can look whatever the hell up I want.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna go to a museum and look at my artwork.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've had my artwork critiqued, and, you know, I've had by my teachers and my public, you know, I've had my stuff in museums and on shows and stuff, but at the same time, I'm not getting professional critiques coming to my shows. For granted, I'm an itty-bitty, you know, I'm fucking a nobody.
But still, that's so weird, because it's like, you know, like, major league, like, sports and stuff, like, have scouts, like, and... where it's like they go and look for like new talent and stuff. It's so bizarre that it's like
anybody can be famous now.
Yeah, I mean that's the part that has just shifted. It's like we've like traded in like an honest like skill set, and then simultaneously complain about it because people with that honest skill set have been like almost phased out of existence.
Yep,
like. They're just drowned out by the masses of everyone saying, ah, it's a 2, ah, it's a 10, ah, it's an 8, ah, it's a 5, ah, it's a 4, my opinion's right, your opinion's wrong, and then getting into these silly squabbles, and then bitching and complaining and about the these outlets. And the artist is
sitting here, like, wait, I just painted a painting.
As a 7, always. Or as a 10, always. Yep. Or as a 1, always. Mm-hmm. Like, objectively, actually, like, it is that, and exists in that no matter what. Because once the beast is done, it's like, you're never... going to be adding to it to make it better, really.
No.
And you can never detract from it to really make it worse. Mm. Like, as far as, like, a whole piece.
Yeah.
You can. I mean, you could destroy it. You could throw pasta sauce at it. Yeah. You don't have an Andy Warhol.
Eat that pasta.
But, I mean, like, it's, like...
Say impasta.
Rasta impasta?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the whole, that piece is complete in that moment and is done, so... therefore, it should actually have, like, an objective, mm-hmm. like, rating, really, yep. is what it comes down to, or at least viewpoint, you know, good, bad, ugly, for worse, whatever it may be.
And the critique,
regardless. And then you move on as an artist. You try to either improve or do something different, yep. and then, you know, whether that strikes the pop culture zeitgeist at the moment or not.
That's the problem.
Can really play into your, like, financial success, mm-hmm. but is it really, like, you know, is that guaranteed then to become a timeless classic? Like, in the world we live in now? Probably not.
No.
Like, so it really doesn't matter. I'm just tired of getting drowned out by wannabe critics.
And that's the problem.
Really what's, like, irking the shit out of me.
And that's where, when you and I come into play, and I can tell you the difference is because everyone's a critic.
And yeah, I agree with that. I see that as well.
And I know you see that, but I see it, I guess, more from my background as an artist and going to museums and actually viewing the artwork and yeah. not sitting on my phone and saying, that's a pretty Monet, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Granted, I've never seen a Monet. That's just an example that came to mind.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know, and the fact that, you know, if we had the opportunity, I would like to still go look and do go to the art museums and view the old and the new and the pretty. Yeah, absolutely. And
I would as well.
But people
that may not be my, like, top level of interest, but that is something that is up there.
And the problem is with video games, and you just click a button, boom, it's on my screen, I can download it and play it. Oh, I hate this game. Good for fucking you. Where's your skill? Where did you learn to grade the quality and the gameplay, the quality and the coloring, and the quality and the structure?
See, and that's the part that, like, that's why I specifically try to pay attention to, like, what studio makes it, what mm-hmm. artists make that, who's the game director, yeah. because those people are artists and have pedigrees.
Yep.
So, you know, which ones have, like, leadership qualities to be able to, like, build a team to create a great game. Mm-hmm. So if a particular game director moves studios for whatever mm-hmm. reason, you know, is it more advantageous to keep track of the studio's pedigree
yeah.
or that particular artist's pedigree, you know, and that's why, but you can, everybody, yes, can be a critic, but you can still be critical of video games.
And I'm not saying that that's not your opinion. I don't, my
brain. The train went off the tracks! Just rumbling through the gravel now!
Anyways,
ties are flying up.
I'm not saying everyone's gonna like my artwork, fucking, but people are always gonna love it and wanna get it.
No, I know that as well. I'm just saying, like, your reason for, like, everyone can be a critic for a video game because you just pop it in and, like, look at it. But I think you can be critical of video games because then there would be, if that was, like, the rule, then nobody could critique video games because mm-hmm. it's the only way to consume a video game.
No, that's not what I meant. I apologize.
I mean, it's kind of like your artwork and stuff. Just because I look at it doesn't mean I can critique it.
No, that's not what I
paraphrased. Even in person.
I paraphrased it wrong. What I meant is the critics have an actual structure in what they're supposed to follow. Yeah, for sure, they probably don't follow it 100%. These are the guidelines.
There is a margin of error in those, like, paradigms that I taught at, like, the, you know, top of the half hour.
Yeah, and, like, you know, these are these guidelines, and they're supposed to follow them because they are put in place so they can be truly judged on the game itself, not personal opinion.
Yeah, holistic reviewing. Why yeah. that word, by the way, I never fucking see around when people are being super critical of something, anything, really. It doesn't even have to be a video game, per se. Never, ever talk about it.
No.
Like, holistic reviewing is a thing. Like, and I just don't understand why
people have forgotten it.
Yeah, and it's as simple it's as just, it's like, it's a lost art unto itself. And
which is the shitty part.
And it just,
that's what makes everyone a critic.
Yeah, and it just drives me crazy, because then everyone is very self-entitled because it is their opinion.
Entitled?
And yes, exactly. And it just
gloss over that.
Your train just went off the tracks in the gravel. There's still railroad ties being kicked up behind you.
I repeated the same word, so
you're like a vinyl skipping. Like, yeah, you're just cruising along. That was 17 minutes. No. But no, it baffles me that so many people are just so steadfast in their opinion, then we'll bitch about reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else will have the exact same, you know, argument on for one half of it. They'll bitch about reviews as well, but then they'll say it's a crappy game instead of a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding that they themselves are wrong because they don't have the critical expertise or skill set to be able to judge it that way.
Yep. Exactly.
Like, they could say, I personally think it's good or I personally think it's bad, but but you can't really then disagree with, like, a review. And then on top of it, the big media outlets, you know, video game wise, you know, IGN,
yeah.
GameSpot and all of them, have been so, like, decentralized and, like, mm-hmm. really unfocused on actually critiquing games. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, views, clicks, some, and, like, the really good game journalists now put, like, weird political slants on stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the, you know, it's a form of escapism. We don't need to, like, go down that rabbit hole. But it's, like, well, why? You're not really doing mm-hmm. your job either, or following, like, a strict parent. Like, you have the skill set, I guess, and then just choose not to use it. The other two people who disagree with one another and the mainstream reviewer don't have the skill set and have no idea
yeah.
that they don't possess it. Yep. And then everyone's just, like, lost in this, like, crowd. I completely understand why people are turning towards podcasts like our own, streamers, mm-hmm. YouTubers, like, very focused and kind of niche people and personalities
mm-hmm.
that they gravitate towards to, or, like, find
yeah.
to listen to or get their opinion about things. Because otherwise you'd have nothing.
Yep.
Like, I mean, there truly wouldn't be anything left. Mm-hmm. Like, the mainstream ones have, like, reacted poorly to social media and the crowd drowning them out. And the crowd's just getting larger and more vocal, it yeah. seems like, and has no idea that they do not possess the professionalism or the skill set to be able to critique in the way that they think they can.
Yep. So, and that's the thing, is it's like with the same, like I said, the artist critique is dead. And I'm not saying they're literally dead, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why when you asked me that question, it threw me off, because I didn't think
well,
about
that's
it.
That's why I wanted it, like, that's why it wasn't anything, like, serious or over the top or, like, goofy. It was, I really wanted to
get your
just gut reaction to it.
Oh, shit, they still have those? That's my reaction.
Because it's a different medium than my own. And mine was very, like, strict and rigid. Like, it was very focused.
I'm not saying there's not. I'm not trained in that aspect, because I'm not an art critique. I am an artist.
Yeah, and see, and I split the difference between both.
Yeah.
So it's like I wrote creatively on my own and mm-hmm. sold some pieces, and some, you know, just live in, you know, fragments or, you know, perpetuity on my hard drive.
Interlibs.
Yeah. But then the other, probably more than half mm-hmm. of my writing career was spent critiquing others, was spent editing and spent doing.
And I'm not saying there's not that out there. There more than likely is that training to be an art critic, the certain schooling you have to take and so on and so forth.
Well, I didn't have, like, specific. I mean, it was discussed a lot when we were peer reviewing when I was in high school and college, but
mm-hmm.
it wasn't something. And then it was more in that circle. For as far as, like, peer reviews mm-hmm. are concerned, that's what it was. It
yeah.
was, like, you know, successful forms of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, are you going to have, like, a Rogerian, or are you going to have, like, a traditional? Like, mm-hmm. it was, like, how are you going to argue your point? And then did you successfully, like, implement, you know, that, you know, tool
yeah.
that you could use, mm-hmm. that you said you were going to use, or did you not? You know, and there's things like that that we don't, like, specifically talk about just
yeah.
on the whole. Like, you know, if a game developer said that this is an action game, why don't we have set criteria for what an action game is
yeah.
that can then better benefit, like, their audiences and
to
reviewers.
Realize, okay, this isn't an action game.
It was like, yeah, actually, this isn't an action game, but it was built as such. Like, you know, it missed the mark on this, this, and this, because this is the criteria here that was, you know,
for an action game.
You know, and that's, like, a loose example, but
it's something.
It would be the same thing, like, in the literary world, where it's like, oh, I was, you know, constructing this dissertation. It was a specific rhetoric about the, you know, Paris Peace Accords.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're either doing, like, the neg or the affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you say that you're going to provide a Rogerian argument. And so in that, like, kind of context, you would provide what the neg would say
mm-hmm.
first, instead of your hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
What is your opposition going to say about your argument? You begin with that.
Yeah.
And then from there, it has to at least be two-pronged. You would break down, and then you would slowly, it's pretty much an upside-down pyramid, draw that into a focus by dismantling the opposition's, like, supposed hypothesis
mm-hmm.
that leads then into your own, and then you're concluding and, like, summarizing, like, argument, And then that would hit hard with, like, your last line or, like, paragraph or whatever, however long your dissertation is.
Yeah.
With why your opinion is right, because you spent the entire Rogerian argument of, like, dismantling their hypothesis by beginning with it. Like, however, if I didn't follow that format, but I told you it was Rogerian, like, you should be able to, like, flat out be like, well, no, you actually used, like, a more traditional style of rhetoric. Mm-hmm. You didn't use a Rogerian like style.
Yeah, but that's
therefore, like, you automatically lose points on this dissertation if it was, like, you know, graded in academic circles. Like, why can't we apply a lot of these kind of things to also, like, critiquing, you know, video games and books and films and artwork and...
But I guess that's not how the Joe
Blow... That was way more complex, by the way, that I wanted to dive into. But...
Because that's not how Joe Blow down the street cares or wants to know.
And my angst comes from Joe Blow has no idea, like, any of, like,
the... Joe Blow don't like the colors. Joe Blow don't like the game.
Did you say Joe Blow don't like the colors?
Oh, God, no. Colors! Colors! Oh, okay. Yeah, that...
I mean, there's, like, alt-right people are fucking fanatical and crazy as shit, so, like...
Oy vey, no.
Joe Blow the colors. Oh, my God.
Colors of the game.
Oh, my God.
Colors.
But, no, it's true. That part, that just drives me crazy, because I spent a lot of money, I spent a lot of time, and I have, like, now years of experience.
Because you're I am.
Learning how to
do this. So I don't want a bigger tig.
How to do it properly and getting paid to do it properly. And then there's some fucking dick on Twitter that's like, no, it's a two. It's like, and all I want to do after all this education and all this writing, all this experience is be like, you're a dick. Like, and that's like all I have. Like, and it's just obnoxious. It just drives me. And then it just becomes that, though. It's just a shouting match. So, like,
yep. And it sticks, like, bigger.
Yeah.
Like, welcome to the world of artists.
I just don't like it. Yeah, like, I haven't been indoctrinated.
Like. Nope. No, I know. But this, like, and that's, like, for me, it's like, I always have my pretending, fuck, words combining, opinion, but I'm not
my a pretending opinion, my pretending.
I have my...
It's like a minion, but with more peas.
Shut up. I have my opinion, but I am not a critique.
A critique? A critic?
Oh my God. The hamster dead. I'm done with this podcast. So I feel like we fulfilled the fulfillment. Go away.
I think we have fulfilled the fulfillment. I think it's been about an hour.
It's been 1 hour and I hate you.
It was a good fucking podcast, though.
Anyways, well, I feel like that's a good wrap-up.
Yeah, I mean, that's our spoiler cast for The Outer Worlds.
And a random dive into of critiques and how bitchy everyone is.
Yeah, and my draw between those two, I used Death Stranding because I feel like that was a more appropriate, like, argument. Just because the IGN, the U.S. IGN review was the only outlier, and then all the other ones were, like, nines. However, the Outer Worlds kind of experienced the same kind of thing. I think it is honestly a seven. Okay. I think it's a decent, good game. And I think where you fall, you said like 6.5 is right in there. I think you're within the, like, if we say that, like, my seven is correct, you fall within the margin of error, and then vice versa. If your 6.5 is correct, my seven falls within the margin of error.
Exactly.
So I think we're on the same wavelength. And
it's like we have training.
Ooh. Drew up like a pros
it's
and
up two.
You're a dick.
No, you're a dick. Small.
But I think the, like, the nines and the really, like, near perfect scores that it was receiving is unwarranted. I think it's almost. I think it's a gut reaction to Bethesda and Fallout 76.
I think so,
more
too.
Than it actually being a great game.
Yep.
Which makes it then inherently biased.
Yep.
And falls outside of the realm of a true critique or an honest criticism.
Yep.
Death Stranding was just a more like concrete example.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my tie-in between like art critics or critics of, you know, the written word. and the outer worlds. And so that's kind of why I wanted to put the two together.
Yeah.
And do the Outer Worlds spoiler cast, as well as a healthy discussion of critics.
Healthy. It's quite healthy.
Healthy.
Healthy and happy and fancy. I agree. No, Gumbalicious. Delicious.
No, Gumbalicious like Gumby.
Oh, no, Pokey! But yes, but I feel like that's definitely a good going to. And again, my name is Ariel.
My name is Anthony.
This is Rage Quit.
Yeah, episode 13. Mm-hmm. We will be back next week. I did want to make this podcast in particular a little bit longer, so... It worked out. So hopefully you guys will receive this as a kind of a meaty, you know, content packed Rage Quit podcast. And then next week we're going to have the Game of the Year 2019, our official picks for, and they're not the same.
Nope.
We're
individuals apparently, supposedly.
What?
When is
so, that ASI does not have a Rage Quit in particular. Does not have like a one and only Game of the Year
or battle
winner. Well, yeah, we definitely like Thunderdome style,
right?
Yeah, wait till December.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, I beheaded a snowman with a giant Q-tip.
What?
You watched the show Gladiator?
No.
Or it was like American Gladiator. That's what I was thinking of.
No.
We only from the 90s? You never saw American Gladiator?
I was born in the 90s.
It's all, yeah.
No.
Remember it was like you had like the red versus blue and they'd be standing on like a almost a gymnastic balance beam and they had like what looked like giant Q-tips that matched their colors and stuff and they'd like worn out and they knock them over to like a foam pit.
It's American Gladiator. Off topic here.
Yeah, a little bit, but... I suppose you've never seen that. That's, that was like a pop culture thing.
But I remember what you're saying now. I've
yeah, that's how we'll it. Battle it out for Game of the Year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll do that. Big foam pit in the backyard.
I don't want to do a foam pit. We should do a pit of snakes.
Well, that's fine. Cool. Right. Black Mambas.
What? No, beat me.
But yeah, we'll have... It'll be a little bit longer than an hour as well, but we have like the bulk of the podcasters recording where we discussed our Game of the Year like contenders or kind of like overall nominees, and then we whittled it down for each of us and picked what... we think is the 2019 Game of the Year for AS Inquisitor.
Yep.
And then we added a little chunk to the end of it that's spliced to it as well. Mm-hmm. So it runs over an hour. And that's just kind of discussing some of the other games that came out after we recorded that kind of initial chunk. So that'll be the last podcast for probably a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm. Holidays, yo.
Yeah, we'll be back at the... beginning of the year, so January 2020, that first Wednesday, we'll have a podcast. But until then,
always follow the bear.
Da, 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 da.
Follow the bear. Follow the bear!
Yeah. Rage quit. That's what we should do. Rage quit. And then there should be a loud, like,
bam!
Yeah, like we just raged out.